And AM 1620.
Good morning, 7:39 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Joining us by phone, we have Jimmy Petronas, our congressman for Florida District 1. Jimmy, welcome back to the show, sir.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. And it's been a couple of weeks due to your schedule, my schedule, everybody's schedule. But glad to have you back. I know one of the things that you have been doing is, I guess you were on a kind of an Alaska tour slash Coast Guard facility inspection. Is that what was happening?
Correct. So I'm on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, and the subcommittee I'm on has oversight over the Coast Guard.
Oh.
So Coast Guard got an awful lot of attention in the big, beautiful bill, a lot of money. The Coast Guard, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but a lot of what they use is all secondhand equipment. Their helicopters are all former Navy helicopters. Their vessels are very old, and so this was an opportunity to kind of reinvigorate the Coast Guard with some resources. And at the same time, China has got, almost a dozen polar icebreakers. Russia has more than that. China's not even a polar nation,
right?
Or an Arctic nation. So here, the United States, literally, we had three icebreakers. And so we had changed the laws, my predecessors did, in order to allow us to buy an icebreaker as opposed to have one built for the Coast Guard. So we were commissioning the first icebreaker since 1999 with the Storrs. It was built over in Mississippi, and now it's a part of the Coast Guard's, fleet.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, there's been this conversation about us kind of falling behind in icebreaking capability and, something the average Floridian doesn't think an awful lot about, but it's a vital, part of controlling and keeping safe our ability to operate in that region, especially vis-a-vis Russia, and as you said, with China as well. I did not know the helicopters were all secondhand. We trained the pilots here at Whiting. I did not think about that as being secondhand material. What else did you?
Yeah, so all the 60s, those are all secondhand.
Huh.
The 65s, the small ones, those are being phased out. The Eurocopters, those are being phased out. So the Coast Guard is going to go to a fleet of 60s. And so the new 60s, here's one of the realities of it. The little 65s used to be able to fit inside the hangars on the cutters. The Blackhawks, the 60s, they can't.
Yeah.
So now the Blackhawks that are going to be coming in, they're going to have collapsible tails and collapsible rotors. So you actually can bring them inside. They can still, do engagements and work off the back of the current cutters. But if you need to put them up while the ship is underway, they're going to need some modifications. So, but the 60s are just more of a workhorse. The 65s, they just have shorter range, but they're still a very capable, dependable unit.
I know for anybody who's, a lot of our audience is former military, but, aircraft carriers, foldable wings, all that kind of stuff. But it still reminds me of the old portable, foldable bike that you kind of bend in half at the mainframe and carry
that.
Like a briefcase. Like that's what they're going to do to the 60s, like you say, the ones that are used by the Coast Guard. Fascinating. And we are
eight-inch wheels.
Yeah, right. And, it's funny because we're obviously a major Coast Guard base here at NAS Pensacola, and it's fluctuated up and down. Like we've had the Cypress here for forever, and we've got, had a bunch of cutters, and now some of them have retired. But they're building more. Is it Panama City is building them? But there's other places building them too, right?
Yeah, so Panama City's building them. Austell over Mobile. So Eastern and Panama City.
Okay.
Austell over Mobile. You got Bollinger over in Mississippi. So, and then you throw on top of that as these U.S. shipyards are building vessels for the Coast Guard. And then the president wanting to like quadruple down on U.S. shipbuilding. This is good for the entire Gulf Coast. But we've gotten in a position where we are not the shipbuilding force that we were of World War II. I mean, China is putting out more vessels in a year or a month than we put out in a year. So You know, we're at a disadvantage. And if we have to stand up and put more product into the water, right now we're going to have to make a commitment and investment and give some flexibility to our shipyards to be able to do the type of work that I think is best for our national security.
Yeah, it's not like we have, you know, if it were building tanks, you can convert car manufacturing to tank manufacturing. When it comes to boats, we don't even have the manufacturer. Like, we just don't have it. We have to, you know, we have to develop that capability.
That's right.
You're headed here, right, today? You're going to the base, to NAS Pensacola?
Yeah, I'll be at NAS Pensacola today, making some rounds and, you know, just really just trying to getting up to speed. I've yet, as I've been told so many times about good folks, you know, Mike Kohler, you know, I love to tease him, but Mike's been really good about staying on top of me regarding the needs of the installation. So we were able to secure some money for the rehabilitation of the Blue Angels hangar. It's you know, what an enormous sense of pride is shown, you know, every July of every year on the beach. And, you know, it was funny. That was about the third time I'd been to the Blue Angels on Pensacola Beach. And this is the first time I realized, hell, everybody out there, they're all from Pensacola. You know, so it's so awesome that there's that much love locally and pride for what takes place. And that our hometown, you know, Blue Angels get to be celebrated.
No, it's fantastic. And yeah, no, Mike is very emphatic about base things, and you know, he's working on that Navy Boulevard approach project, I know. And you know, I would hate to even guess, but I'm assuming that the over under is at least 10 on how many times he's mentioned to you base buffering, protection, compatibility, and those kinds of things, because I know he says it all the time.
That's important,
right?
You know, it's all important because all that is NAS Pensacola is a massive economic engine,
right?
And we need to do everything we can. There's a lot we can do outside the fence, and the state of Florida has been doing some, but you know, we're going to do our best to make sure that we're contributing.
You know, obviously the big story in the news right now is the meeting today where President, you know, of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, is going to come to the White House with entourage of other European leaders and meet with President Trump and talk about the possibility of making a deal with Russia after the meeting he had with Vladimir Putin. I handicap it as a low likelihood of success, because if they were willing to concede, there would have been concessions before. You know, neither side wants to end this for obvious reasons. But I don't know. What's your take on all this?
So, you know, I think as soon as the meeting was over and Trump made the announcement that we're doing a meeting with Zelensky in D.C. this week with European leaders, imagine Zelensky was on the phone calling every single one of those European leaders that he could convince that is a head of state to make that trip to D.C. So they're going to try to put as much pressure on Trump as they can. But, you know, I mean, here's I think what's important to note. The war doesn't stop without the United States. I truly do not think that Europe will step up unless the United States just totally goes into isolationist mode. I do not feel like Europe will stop what's happening in Russia. So yeah, there's going to have to be some type of deal cut between, you know, Russia getting what they want and Ukraine getting what they want. And unfortunately, neither one of these guys is going to get 100% of what they want. That's you know, to me, is a satisfactory deal. But of course, Zelensky's going to, these are high emotionally charged individuals, because Zelensky, you know, he feels like he was the one who was sucker punched. You know, they both lost thousands of soldiers and then the civilians that were affected.
Yeah.
You know, so this is not going to be an easy decision to make. And Zelensky's going to look like he's saving face, you know, and Trump just wants the bloodshed to stop. You know, he truly cares about the loss of life. But, you know, in order to do that, I mean, the United States doesn't want to be in a war against Russia because, you know, of an impasse between, you know, Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah, and I agree with you. One of the things that I think has come clear from listening to him, and people maybe don't always think about it, but, you know, he was born right at the tail end of World War II. I mean, you know, he hates war. He grew up in a post-war environment, but he hates the death. I mean, really viscerally, you can hear it in his voice when he talks. And that's why when he talks about things like, you know, Golden Dome or nuclear war and, you know, denuclearization, like all of these things, it's all because, I mean, he really genuinely hates the loss of life and, you know, just despises that, which is admirable. Good. You know, we should be in that vicinity. One of the things that I had wanted to talk with you about that we had not gotten a chance to is one of the byproducts of the so-called Big Beautiful Bill was a change in the way gamblers calculate their income. And I thought this was such a fascinating thing. The professional gamblers are losing their minds over this because, as I understand it, their gains, you know, their winnings is 100% of income. But then, of course, you offset that with your losses. And so, you know, the way they make their money is on volume. Just like the house makes its money on volume and getting a small percentage, they make their money on volume. But now, sure, under the Big Beautiful Bill, they can only deduct 90% of their losses, which many of them say, well, I mean, that's going to put us out of business because our margin is much less than 10%, right? And so they can't continue to do what they're doing. Do you know, was this known in advance, your thoughts on this? Because it seems like a really, you know, like the stock market, you know, you get to offset all of your losses, all your gains with losses, but not so in gambling anymore.
So the I guess the formula out there, once you, if you play blackjack by the same rules that the house has to play against, you have a chance, I think, of less than 0.5% to do better than the house. And the house is going to be depending there, or, you know, hoping that your emotions are going to make you do things you shouldn't do and you're not going to have that discipline. These professional gamblers, they're disciplined. So, I mean, so when you're looking at what that 10% changes in their tax rates, that literally is almost, it could be just enough to put them in trying to find another profession.
Yeah.
But any bill like the Big Beautiful Bill, it requires a true up. It's got to be fiscally sound. So, you know, there will be different manipulations of numbers and tax rates and provisions of the bill in order to create income or reduce taxes in order to offset each other. And this is no different. I'm sure some staffer in the Finance and Tax Committee or Ways and Means Committee went out and saw this as a way, you know, probably felt like this is a discretionary income. But at the end of the day, I mean, you do have a real living, breathing profession of people that gamble for a living. We've been hearing about it, and I'm sure that, you know, there will be every attempt to try to get this corrected in some type of a future legislation. We'll just see if Congress has an appetite for it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question about, and that's, I find that encouraging. I'm not a big fan of gambling per se, but, you know, I think it, basically professional gamblers, like you say, would have to find jobs as what, actuaries or stockbrokers, and so, you know, do something else for a living.
Yeah, well,
but the recreational gambler would be the one who might.
You can write up 100% of your stock loss.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and you can have 100% of your stock losses. So I get their gripe.
Yeah,
you know, I do understand that.
Last thing that I kind of wanted to talk about with you is you made an interesting comment. You did an interview with The Hill, kind of a TV show, podcast, whatever it was, on I think it was Friday, and you were talking about the need to lower interest rates as an offset against the overall effect of the tariffs, which another $24 billion in revenue last month for tariffs. It's something people don't talk a lot about, but it's a massive source of income for the United States. But can you maybe just do us a 2-minute or 1-minute kind of explanation of what you think ought to be done in order to keep the economy humming as import prices keep, you know, are high, right, because of the tariffs?
Sure. I mean, you really do your show prep. yeah, look, that's the way I feel. I mean, businesses, some businesses are being directly affected by the tariffs. I get that. And some of them have U.S. Investments. But, you know, you look at the typical business when they borrow money in order to cash flow their business. You know, my family's restaurant, we use a line of credit in order to make the most out of our abilities at running the restaurant. That line of credit, when interest rates are up, it's a higher cost of business for that operator. So this is, you know, now you go throw tariffs into the mix, and that's why I really appreciate where President Trump is going, is, you know, he wants to help those businesses that are being affected by the tariffs. Some of them are U.S.-based. So let me get you some lower interest rates out there so your cost of carry of money when you borrow money is less to offset some of the tariffs. And look, you say what you want to say. I think Jerome Powell is, if you're in government at that level, it's political. It is political. Jerome Powell had a number of reductions during the end of the Biden administration, during the election, probably to try to jumpstart, to try to change things, and got an enormous amount of leverage placed on him. But I feel right now, if we're going to try to true up our trade and differences with tariffs across the world, then let's take care of our local businesses and the people, even that are trying to acquire their first home with a lower interest rate.
So, and which would largely, I'm guessing, but you correct me if I'm wrong, and I love your perspective on this as a former CFO, right, of Florida, you get this stuff, is much better than I do, is that in the long run, if we can onshore manufacturing, we don't have to have the high impact of tariffs, but that's that transitional. You know, how do you get over that hump of businesses who are, A, dependent on loans, obviously, they're running financing for their businesses, but also are affected dramatically by tariffs until we can get stuff onshored and the production is local and they can be saving money through that. You got to do something because otherwise you're just going to go away.
100%. Because you're not going to build a million square foot factory in Florida overnight. It's going to take, you know, a minimum of, you know, 3 to 4 years. And so that business has got to make that decision. They got to look at the political environment that we're in. So the political environment means, you know, you really got 2 years because you hope everything stays strong and well through the midterms, that their predictability in government stays the same.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, there's that volatility. This is why the president's pushing so hard. He wants to get this stuff done yesterday because he wants to give these businesses, those that have the capital to invest, the comfort to make that investment. And once they get this, their momentum going, this is all part of Trump 2.0 with the economy we had in 2019.
Yeah.
You know, it's I'm a believer in this guy. I feel like you got to trust him. You got to give him some discretion. And I'm sorry, those folks with Trump derangement syndrome out there, this is what the election in November resulted in, and I'm ready to give maximum potential to the Trump administration.
Jimmy Petronis is our congressman for Florida District 1. Jimmy, as always, thank you so much for the generous time that you give us and our audience and answering my questions, and we'll talk to you again next week, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Andrew.